It's impossible for us to imagine the tremendous work that the Holy Spirit had to do in selecting what to put in the Bible. When you think that it covers 3,500 years of human history, actually goes back to the beginning with Genesis, but first books were written about 3,500 years ago. And there'd be so many things that he could choose to put in a book that we need that we wouldn't be able to carry it around. And that's true when we talk about examples. Examples for us to follow and examples for us not to follow. Our Wednesday night classes are focusing on examples, but particularly on examples of young people, young men and young women. We will see tonight, however, that the example of this young man is also an example for parents. And so it's a double-edged sword. It has a double benefit. And hopefully we can, as we prayed with Rocky, glean some benefit out of studying what the Holy Spirit has revealed here about a spoiled brat. So let's look together at 1 Kings chapter 1. 1 Kings chapter 1 and chapter 2. If you'll go to the end of chapter 2, the last sentence will tell you what these two chapters are really about. David was on his deathbed, David the king, and so it would be time for another king to take the throne. And so here's the contest. Who's going to be the next king of David's boys? So we're going to be looking at one of the boys, Adonijah, who wanted to take the throne, but another one of his boys named Solomon, who God chose to take the throne. And the events that are recorded in chapter 1 and chapter 2 lead up to that last sentence in chapter 2. Thus the kingdom was established in the hands of Solomon. When Solomon became king, we can't be certain about his age, but we have enough data to know he was probably somewhere between 15 and 25 years old. So he was a young man. And yet God chose him to be the king. But Adonijah had other ideas. And he was going to try to take the throne. And that's what we're going to be looking at in our study tonight. So in 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 5, now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, now Adonijah was one of David's sons, one of the six boys born to him in Hebron, each by a different woman, six wives. And he exalted himself, saying, I will be king. So the stage is set, the culmination of which is in that last sentence in chapter 2. But he said, I will be king. So he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen with 50 men to run before him. His father had never crossed him at any time by asking, why have you done so? And he was also a very handsome man. And he was born after Absalom. So we have the answer to our first question on your lesson. What did Adonijah presume to do? Not because David appointed him, not because God told him, but he of his own accord. You gave me the answer, didn't you?
Try to become king.
That's very good. Very good. Tried to become king. And so on his own, he wanted to be a king. And thus prepared this parade, if you want to call it, this royal parade, to try to win the support of Israel. And what this reflects is a prideful and selfish spirit. At this time, we can't be certain about the age of Adonijah, but the indications are that he was probably somewhere between 37 and 38 years old. You said, I thought we were studying about young men. Of course, 37 and 38, the Jews would talk about a person in that age as youth. But actually, what we're looking at tonight is the product of his youth. He's 37 and 38, somewhere in that area. But what he is now is a result of what happened when he was young, or what failed to happen when he was young. And we've got young people in our audience tonight. And what these young people will be when they're in their 30s may be largely influenced by what's happening in their lives while they're back at home right now. That's a lesson for them to think about. Of course, young people don't think 20 years down the road, but parents might. And this lesson we're studying tonight is a very important lesson for parents. And so in 1 Kings chapter 1, in the first part of the verse, we have the writer of Kings telling us something about Adonijah. He introduces the fact that he wanted to be king, assumed that role, prepared to gather the support of Israel. But in 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 6, the writer tells us why he did that. And his father had never crossed him at any time by asking, "Why have you done so?" Would that justify the title of the lesson? He was a spoiled brat. He was a prince. He was a king's son. He lived in palaces. He no doubt felt like he had privilege. But David never challenged what he was doing, evidently. Now, you ask the question, why? Why did David never challenge Adonijah, train Adonijah into what he was doing? And we really don't know for sure, but there are some possible answers. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 16. When I read this, I try to think, what influences a father in the training of his child? Well, here's one thing that might influence this father in the training of his child. You go back to his youth. Oftentimes, fathers train their children in the light of their experiences, either so that their children will follow in their steps, or that they will not have to suffer what they suffered as a youth. How many times have you had a father say, "I don't want my boy to go through what I went through"? In 1 Samuel chapter 16, beginning in verse 3, we're at another period in Israel's history where it was time to select a new king. Saul had failed in his role, and God was going to anoint a new king. And Samuel the prophet was the one that was selected by God to choose and to anoint this new king. And so in verse 3, "You shall invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do." And at this sacrifice, a king would be chosen by God. "So tell Jesse to come to the sacrifice, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I designate to you." So Samuel did what the Lord said and came to Bethlehem. And so, go down to verse 5. "He consecrated Jesse," middle of the verse, "and his sons, and invited them to the sacrifice." However, there's one son he didn't invite. If you go back down to verse 11, Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the children?" So these boys started coming before Samuel. And so, six, came about when they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely, the Lord's anointed is before. This is the one." Maybe he was tall. Maybe he was robust. I don't know. But he said, "Surely this is the one." And the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature," which indicates there's something about the way Eliab looked. He said, "Because I rejected him, for God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab. Well, at the end of the verse, neither has the Lord chosen this one. That's number two. Next, he made Shammah pass by. Neither has the Lord chosen that one. That's number three. Verse 10 says, Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. Seven. But the Lord didn't choose any of these at the end of verse 10. So Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the children?" "There remains yet the youngest, and behold, he's tending the sheep." In other words, he wasn't invited. Seven brothers are invited, but David's not invited. If there's some special event, you're a young man, maybe 16 years old, 18 years old. I'm not sure of David's age. He's probably a teenager at this time. And all your brothers are invited. And your dad is the one that tells them to come at the invitation of a prophet. But dad says, "No, son, you stay here and take care of your job." How would you feel? But anyway, that's what happened. And so he's tending the sheep. So Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for he will not sit down until he comes here." So he sent and brought him in. And he wasn't the kind of guy that would look like the fella you would appoint for a king, because it says he was ruddy, with beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. He was just a young boy. But the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." You reckon David remembered that the rest of his life? When we're reading in 1 Kings chapter 1, David is now about 70 years old. He's going to die at 70. But here's something that happened in his youth. And I can see David never wanting one of his sons to feel neglected, looked over, left out. I don't know if that's what motivated him, never to reprove Adonijah, just let him do what he wanted to. If it is, it was an overreaction to a mistreatment that the daddy suffered. Daddies can make that mistake. I don't know if that's it. But here's another thing about this text that we're in right now. You'll note it says that he was out tending the sheep. Tending sheep can be a dirty, nasty, and dangerous job. The other boys are invited to the feast. You stay home, take care of the sheep. When you look down in verse 33 of chapter 17, Saul recognizes David as a youth. Said, "You're not able to go against this giant, this Philistine giant." David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he's taunted the armies of the living God." David didn't spend his youth in a palace with servants waiting on him. He was a shepherd and face some difficult and dangerous circumstances. How many times have you had a father say, I don't want to ask too much of my son. I had a hard life growing up. I had to work so very hard. I don't want my son to have to work hard. And as a result, sometimes they raise bums. Boys that don't know how to work hard, don't know the work ethic. So overreacting to experiences of youth can lead to a boy saying, I don't want to work. Dad, don't cross him. Okay, son, that's all right. I love you. Is that what happened? I don't know. But I can see how that could be it. In 1 Samuel 17, verse 26 through 29, here's another thing that Daniel may well have remembered from his youth that might have influenced the way he raised Adonijah. David, you know, heard about he was bringing food to the brothers in the military, found out about this Philistine named Goliath that was taunting the armies of God. Verse 26, David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? The people answered in accord with one word, saying, this it will be done for the man who kills him. Now remember, this is probably a teenage boy. Here are all these seasoned soldiers. None of them are about to go up against this Philistine. So Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger burned against David and said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart. Or you have come down in order to see the battle. You ever been misaccused? Your motives ever been impugned? You're just an insolent brat. You're wicked. You left your job. You're over here bragging. David said, what have I done? Was it not just a question? And you know the rest of the story. He went up against Goliath and killed him. But this is a little bit of light how his brothers treated him. You reckon David ever forgot that? So as Adonijah grew up, I don't know, maybe David said, I don't want Adonijah to have to experience that. And so as Adonijah in his youth might exalt himself and be proud of himself and put himself forward, maybe David just didn't cross him. But say, now, son, let's sit down and talk. You're making yourself too important. You're launching out on presumption. Ennis? You had a comment?
Yes. I was curious about, this happened after David was anointed. So I wonder if his brothers were jealous.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they're the oldest, and they've all been passed over. The word jealous doesn't appear, but that would, why would Eliab act so hatefully, contemptuously toward his brother? There's one other possibility. Maybe all of these are a blend. I don't know. You know, David loved his boys. I don't deny that. I don't doubt that a bit. But he wasn't a good father. You see that with Absalom. Absalom was another sorry kid. You wonder, was David maybe so busy with the affairs of the kingdom that he didn't take time to be a daddy? You know, when Amnon, one of his boys, raped Tamar, where's David in all of this? I don't know. But man can get so busy with either their jobs or the house or the car or their pursuits, they don't have time to even know what their boys are doing, much less to cross them and say, no, son, you can't go there. You can't do that. You can't go with those people. Why? Let's sit down and talk about it. I don't know why. What I do know is this. Whatever the reason is, it became the cause of Adonijah's downfall. So So this is a lesson for parents. You today, as a parent, most of you are through with parenting. You could teach this to your children or others. What you do or fail to do can determine to a great extent the destiny of your children 20 years from now. Yes, sir?
Grandparents might think, well, this is not my child. It may be my grandchild, not my child. So where and when is it I should take the issue to do something about something I should
do? Good point, Ennis. Grandparents sometimes will let their grandchildren be disrespectful, speak to them disrespectfully, not obey them. Tell them to do something, they don't do it. Well, it's okay. I want them to like me. I'm the grandparent. They're listening. They're learning. And grandparents, if you want to influence those grandchildren, you'll be dead and gone maybe. But do it while they're young. Remember 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 6. And see the story of this young man. Look at Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs chapter 29. Look at verse 15. Does this sound familiar? The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who, what? Gets his own way. What did we read in 1 Kings 1:6? His father never crossed him. A child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Look at verse 17. So here's what you do then, parents. Correct your son, and he'll give you comfort. He will also be a delight to your soul. And there are a number of other passages. I have some here, but time will not allow. That encourage parents. If you want the best child-rearing manual in the world, read the book of Proverbs. You can't get a better manual. Because it's given to you by the Creator of mankind. It won't be the kind of things you read in the books for parenting. You can go down and get at the bookstore. But it's God's plan for raising children. In 1 Kings 1:6, there's another very interesting thing.
Steve?
Yes.
Do you think that the other brothers knew that Solomon had been decided that he was going to be the king after David died?
I don't know how much they knew, but being a king was not a matter of personal choice. I want to be king, so I'm the guy. It's not that way in Israel. God chose the king. And there is no indication that Adonijah was to be king. Now, Adonijah's two older brothers had died. And there was one other brother, possibly, we don't know, that had died because you never hear any more about him. So he would be in the line to be the king. But there's no indication that that was ever suggested to him. It's his own personal presumption. And so it's going to be made very clear in the story that follows, that he's not the one. He still is not satisfied with it, as you'll see.
Because Bathsheba went to David when she knew what was going on, and it indicated that she knew.
You're getting ahead of me. Just a minute.
Sorry.
Wait, we'll get to Bathsheba.
Sorry.
We'll get to Bathsheba. She went to David because Nathan told her to go. Remember? Okay, so. Yes.
Did Solomon write Proverbs? Did he write that passage we just read about reproving your child?
Solomon wrote a lot of Proverbs. He didn't write all the Proverbs. I'm not sure about that particular section. But he wrote Proverbs and he collected Proverbs.
It just seems like it's interesting.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought about that, Josh. That is interesting. Another interesting thing here in verse 6. What does this next statement have to do with anything that we're studying? It says, and he was also a very handsome man, and he was born after Absalom. So he was handsome. So what? What's that got to do with anything? Well, Absalom, he said he's born after Absalom. Absalom was an older brother. And when you study the story of Absalom, you see Absalom was also very handsome. And that may well have contributed to his selfish, prideful attitude. Absalom was also very selfish and prideful. He wanted the kingship so bad, he was going to kill his father to get it. That's the older brother. But you read that Absalom was a handsome man. 2 Samuel chapter 14. And verse 25, in all Israel, no one was as handsome as Absalom, so highly praised. So when people are handsome, people praise them. What does that do for your pride? And so maybe that's why this statement's there. I don't know. This may have contributed to the attitude you see in the first part of verse 6. I can't be certain. What I do know is today in our society, we live in a narcissistic society, don't we? You see people with their phones taking their pictures. Oh, they're so proud of themselves. Spend hours on their makeup and their hair and hundreds of dollars and on their body and their fit. And all about got to look good. What in the world? You want to look clean and neat for your woman, to be attractive for your husband. But we're obsessed with self. And you well know that oftentimes today that contributes to the prideful, selfish attitude in our society. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's why the writer put it there. I know he put it there right after that statement. One thing for sure we can learn from as parents, maybe we like to tell our children how cute they are. And they're the prettiest kids that ever lived and all of that. Well, they are to you. You know, you people throw you a picture of a baby. Isn't she cute? Looked like she came out of a fight. You know? But all that baby's cute to them. And it's okay to praise your children. But also have a balance. Realize you're not the... you're not the number one person on the block necessarily. You're not the prettiest thing in the world. The world could get by without you. And so we don't want to feed this kind of an attitude that just focuses on self and self's looks and self's position in life. I saw a hand go up somewhere. Yes, sir.
How many times parents take advantage of the wrong thing is to emphasize how cute they are, how handsome or beautiful. They should be emphasizing how what's important is.
That's exactly right. Good point, Ennis. They ought to be emphasizing the beauty of the inward man. That's an excellent point. When you get to verse 7, you see something else about Adonijah. We ask you on the lesson, can a spoiled brat get people to join with him? He did, didn't he? Who are these two guys? Now, on your lesson, I got a typo. It's not Adonijah, it's Abiathar. And Joab. Who are these two guys? Who's Abiathar? He's the priest. Who's Joab? He's the commander of the army. Well, where did Adonijah get the idea he could get people to join him? Well, look, as he's a boy, and he wants to do something, he can get people to join him to do stuff, and nobody's going to stop him because his daddy never crossed him. But son, you can't get a bunch of boys and go do that. That's wrong. Or that's hurtful. But he was never taught that, I guess. And so he got some fellas he thought could help him. Pretty influential people. A priest, the priest, and the commander of the army. So once again, you see the foundation laid by this failure in training that we read about back here in verse 6 that led to very possibly paved the way for this kind of conduct.
We don't know that maybe his past life when he's coming up, these characteristics that he has, leading other people to our domain and ended up helping and nursing these two men.
Well, I know when I was in high school, yeah, they had schools when I was a boy, believe it or not. But back when I was in high school in Port Arthur, Texas, it's a pretty rough school. And they had gangs. And I observed something about gangs. A bully would lead the gang. But he was only a bully when he was with the gang. Get him off by himself, it's a different story. And so we're going to have one of our lessons about a young man in a gang. But that's often what happens. So he gets people around him to support him and, hey, let's go fight those people. Back then they used brass knuckles and knives. But, oh, we've got to get the group together. And I can see Adonijah as he grows up, getting his way about everything, being a bully. It's going to be my way. And if you don't like it, I've got all these people to support me. Can I be certain that happened? I cannot. I just know that as he paints this picture, you see this man in his 30s and what he's doing. And the writer has already laid a foundation back up in verse 6. Why did he even mention that, verse 6, if it didn't have something to do with the story he's telling about this man now? In 1 Kings 1, verse 11, Nathan spoke to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. This is what Sally was referring to about Bathsheba, saying, "Have you not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king? And David, our Lord, does not know it? So now, come, please, let me give you counsel and save your life and the life of your son Solomon. Go at once to King David and say to him, 'Have you not, my lord, O king, sworn to your maidservant, saying, surely Solomon, your son, shall be king after me, and he shall sit on my throne.'" So evidently, that had been made known at least to Bathsheba. So why then has Adonijah become king? And says, "You go talk to David, and while you're there speaking with the king, I'll come in after you and confirm your words." So that's what she did. She went to the king in the bedroom. You remember, David was very old now and somewhat bedridden. I don't know if he got out of bed or not, but first part of chapter 1, we didn't read that. But he's older, nearly about to his death. You read about his death there in chapter 2. And so she talks to David, her husband, about this. Verse 17, "My lord, you swore to your maidservant by the Lord your God, saying, surely your son Solomon shall be king after me and shall sit on my throne. Now behold, Adonijah is king, and now, my lord the king, you do not know it. And he sacrificed oxen and fatlings and sheep in abundance, and invited all the sons of the king, and Abiathar the priest, and Joab the commander of the army. But he's not invited Solomon your servant." In other words, he just going full charge with this to try to solidify his rule. And so she talked to the king about it. And while she's talking, Nathan did what he said. He came in. And so Nathan came in before the king and confirmed these words. And so verse 28, King David answered and said, "Call Bathsheba to me." She came into the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king vowed to her and said, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all distress, surely as I vowed to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, saying, your son Solomon shall be king after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place, I will indeed do so this day." And so David then confirmed that Solomon was to be the king, not Adonijah. And so let's suppose that Adonijah was successful in being king. whose lives would be in danger?
Solomon
and maybe Bathsheba, both of them, because he didn't want anybody to oppose him. You see, when in chapter 2, when Solomon is solidifying his rule, he thought it necessary to eliminate some people that had opposed his rule. And Solomon was a good man, good young man. Adonijah was not. So you can imagine what Adonijah would have done without having the conscience that Solomon did. And so, you know, as a young boy growing up, if he got his way, nobody ever crossed him. It hurt somebody's feelings. So what? Somebody got hurt. I got my way. Where's Daddy to correct him? I don't know, because it says Daddy never crossed him. Yes, Ennis? Yeah, we'll get to that here in a minute. That's right. And so, he had first acknowledged Solomon, but then he came back and tried to get the throne through another avenue. But nevertheless, this is, you remember verse 6. I didn't put it there. The writer did. Before this story, here's a guy that was lacking in training. We need to be taught when we're young. Everything don't go your way. It's not a life of peaches and cake for you. You got to work. You got to respect others. You got to respect the rights of others. And it's Daddy's job and Mama's job to teach that to children. And young people in our audience, if you got a mom and daddy, they don't always let you get your way and make you do things that are unpleasant and not let you do things you'd like to do. You think about this story, and then you go home and thank God for your parents. That you've got some parents that train you and love you. All right, so... did I hear somebody? Yes, Linda?
Well, I also was thinking about Joab, and the priest, Solomon did have him killed. And here Joab, all these years, had been head of the army, and he had fought with David, and the priest had carried the Ark of the Covenant, before David, but they were carried along by this young man. And so we have to be careful, and even young people have to be careful who they throw their lot in with.
Very good point. Yeah, who are you going to throw your lot with? And so Abiathar and Joab, instead of staying with their loyal to their longtime leader David, threw their lot in with Adonijah. I don't know if Adonijah promised them something in the coming kingdom. Great positions of honor, wealth. But the choices we make may have some terrible consequences connected with it. It was in the case of these two men. Yes, Josh?
Is there a kind of a, this is to the room, this question. Is there anything we can gain from the specific question that is connected to crossing Adonijah, which is, why have you done so? I just go back to when I was, growing up, my dad was disciplining me. If it proceeded into a lecture, and I would just,
You hate those lectures, don't you?
and then this principle, I teach people, my work, and I can either just bark at them, and I don't know if they're receiving the information or not, or I can do more of an inquiry.
Good point.
Are you understanding what I'm saying, sort of thing?
Good point.
And I don't know if there's much to gain, if that's really the point of, there's a lot of ways, a lot of phrases that could have been put there to connect with crossing your son. But the phrase that was put there was, why have you done this? Which is a question, and trying to find out what's going on inside the child.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, Josh. That would make Adonijah think, why did you make this choice? Right. That's a good point. Yes, sir, Todd?
Just thinking of, we're throwing out some different reasons about Adonijah and thing, but you know, the Lord did choose Solomon. But and the other boys were technically in line as we think of kings and queens, the oldest ones. Even the oldest one received a double portion and that sort of thing in that society. But you know, David had a bunch of wives, and I guess he had children by a bunch of them. I'm not quite clear on that.
In Hebron, he had six boys but six women, but he had others too.
Now, did Bathsheba have any other children?
Huh?
Did Bathsheba and David have any other children?
Yeah, there were, I think, three or four other boys.
Were there? Uh-huh. Now, I don't know. I'm just going to speculate here. If Bathsheba, being her situation, how she came in to be the wife of David through not great circumstances, and if she would, you know, if another child had become the king, if they would have sort of wiped out her and her children just because of the Lord maybe was taking care of her this way, and so that she would not be dealt with harshly, perhaps by the other children's, you know, I don't know.
Possibly, I don't know. Why God chose Solomon, I can guess. I can't say definitely, because at least as a young man, he had a very humble heart and he sought the Lord. Is that the reason? I don't know. But, you know, did he do it to protect Bathsheba? I don't know that either.
We don't know. It's speculation.
Don't know. And so, you know, when David was chosen, it said the Lord looks at the heart. That's why he chose David over the other brothers. That may well be the reason, at least at this point in Solomon's life, as a young man, when you get to chapter 3, I believe it is, when he prays, you know, what did he pray for? Not riches or power, for wisdom, to guide God's people. And maybe that's the reason. I don't know. Now, he departed from that later. So in 1 Kings 2:13, David says Solomon's the king. And then verse 10, David died of chapter 2. So then Adonijah's got another plan. When David was old, of course, they didn't have electric blankets. So a young woman was come to lay with him, keep him warm. I don't know what his health situation was. They did not have sex or that kind of thing. But that's what they did. Well, so he had never married this girl. So Abishag goes to Bathsheba. Said, won't you get... I mean, Adonijah goes to Bathsheba. Said, won't you get Abishag as a wife for me? And of course, the idea, if he married Abishag, that would give him a line to the throne. And so Bathsheba goes to Solomon. But Solomon already is displaying some wisdom. He sees what's going on. Tells his mother, won't you just ask the throne for him? And so, that's verse 22. Why are you asking Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him also the kingdom, the rule, the dominion. And so, verse 23 said, Adonijah has spoken this against his own life. So King Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him so that he died. So I asked this last question, what did this spoiled brat, I didn't word that very good. What did this spoiled brat bring upon himself? His early death. Isn't that interesting? A prince could have had money, an easy life, but boy, that pride... nurtured in his youth. And I guess he died before he was 40 or somewhere in that area. Sad, isn't it?
Sounds like him and his brother were similar.
Yeah, Absalom does sound that way. Absalom was before him, and he too, full of pride. And of course, he died an early death as well because of it. So, you know, you read this 1 Kings 2:13. Where did he get the idea to manipulate to get his way? Well, as a boy, he wanted his way. Nobody's going to stand in the way. Manipulate. Figure a way. Get somebody on your side. Work some kind of plan. And maybe the foundation was laid back then. Yes, sir.
I mean, a lot of this mirrors today. I'm only speaking maybe kind of partially and sarcastically. Those people who act like this don't get killed. Meaning we have so many in today's society who suffer from entitlement and the coined term affluence. You see it, you saw it with a few years ago where that kid ran over somebody or drove drunk and killed somebody and they tried to run away to Mexico. We have to be very careful today because there is no judgment like there was here. There is no judgment on this. And it can creep in very, very quickly, can creep in very, very quietly without us knowing. I want a better life for my kids. So that means I'm going to raise them differently because I felt like my parents were harder on me. Next thing you know, I've got a 31-year-old or a 21-year-old sleeping on my couch and playing video games all day, and I'm supporting them. More importantly, the sense of entitlement. You know, instead of you go work and earn something for yourself, I see it a lot today, whereas I want you to pay me what I think I'm worth, and then I'll get there.
Yeah.
Give me what I want, and this is him. He was never told no. He had a sense of entitlement, and when he didn't get what he wanted, and that verse where, in verse 6 where it says, verse 6, why have you done so? It is in parallel or in conjunction with crossed him, pained him, corrected, you know, rebuked. I mean, those sort of things. I understand the idea of questioning, but he was never told no. Never brought to his attention.
So, entitlement's a good word. I'm glad you brought that in. I'm sure this boy felt entitled, if we use that term. He's a prince. And people feel entitled. And like Keith said, sometimes boys get out of school and they feel like they're entitled to make what somebody's been working for 30 years makes and those kind of things. Or like this rich boy that he was talking about was in the news, you know, instead of the parents blaming him. Well, it was the disease of riches or something, some foolishness that came out that was the cause of it. Yes, Mark?
Kind of like the whole monarch thing that Todd brought up a minute ago. He did have a little bit of entitlement, and that kind of drug Joab around with him and ended up causing his life to end as well.
Who is this? Yeah.
There was a slight entitlement in the way monarchies work. So he kind of got drug in because he may or may not have known that Solomon was promised the kingship.
Okay.
Hey. Drug along.
A lot more about this we'd like to know, but the Holy Spirit didn't tell us. Did I see another hand over here, Linda? Surely not.
So, be on the same page as, you know.
That's a good point Linda makes. They learn early to try to manipulate. We shouldn't let it happen. That's a good point. And if you've been a parent, you've experienced that very thing. You had some good comments tonight. I appreciate your involvement in the class.